Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
Everybody, this is Lori, and welcome to today's episode. Today, we are talking with Melanie Florsham, whose name probably sounds familiar because we've had her on a couple of other episodes, but our focus today is going to be all about dyslexia and the most appropriate programs to help students or adults with dyslexia. We had an amazing conversation, and it was so good that we're going to split this into two episodes. So today, you're going to get to hear the first part and then come back to the next episode and hear the rest of our conversation. So sit back and enjoy our conversation with Melanie Florsham. Everybody, welcome to episode 57 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. This is Lori.
And this is Abby.
Happy New Year. Happy 2023.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
It's our first episode of 2023. So we're excited to be back.
Hope everyone had a wonderful holiday season and some nice quality time with family and friends and time to relax and rejuvenate and get ready for 2023.
I think it's going to be a good year.
I think so, too.
So we are starting a brand new series today on interventions. What are some things that you can do to help with the different types of learning disabilities and things we've discussed over the last 2 years? So we've decided to start today with dyslexia. And what do you do about dyslexia? What is the right kind of therapy? So today we have Melanie Florsham. She's back from Gateway Growth and Development. She was on episode 54 as our ADHD coach talking to us about executive functions. Today she's in with a different hat on because her true love, dyslexia, is what she's going to talk to us about today. She is a dyslexia therapist. Melanie, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a great way to kick off the year.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you're not only a certified dyslexia therapist and an ADHD coach, are you also a certified academic language therapist?
Yes. So
you got lots of letters.
Yes. So I by trade, I'm a teacher. So I have a bachelor's in interdisciplinary studies. And then I went back and got my master's in education, which is where I got my dyslexia therapy certification. So I'm a certified academic language therapist through ALTA, which is our licensure organization. And then I'm also a licensed dyslexia therapist in the state of Texas.
Okay.
Which is different than a licensed dyslexia practitioner.
Oh, it is.
In Texas.
Okay.
A practitioner has a bachelor's.
Mm.
And then a therapist has a master's.
Okay, good to know.
So let's start. I want to go back to that, though, because I do want to clarify, because academic language therapist doesn't to most people sound like that's somebody who does dyslexia therapy.
Right.
So let's first start with some basic stuff, like define dyslexia and then talk about why it's an academic language therapist. So I think those are kind of intertwined, right?
Yes. So, you know, a lot of questions that I will get when people find out that I'm a certified academic language therapist, they get confused with a speech therapy, yeah. Speech mm-hmm. pathologist. So what I explain is that, you know, speech pathology deals more with articulation in speaking, or that receptive, expressive language piece, where a language therapist is dealing with letters, symbols, and sounds, and the processing that happens with symbols and sounds, letters and sounds. And okay. It's different, mm-hmm. right? Because when you are articulating, you know, that's all your mouth, and it's definitely brain functioning as well. But that expressive and receptive language piece, the processing is different mm-hmm. than processing sounds in language, like in words or with letters and such. Okay. Does that help?
That totally helps. Mm-hmm. So then your definition of dyslexia would be?
So dyslexia is when someone has not an inability, because, you know, you can do it on some level, but being able to listen to the sounds in language, pulling apart words to hear the individual sounds in language, or blending those sounds together to make a word, or, you know, spelling, being able to hear the sounds in a word and attach a letter to it, mm-hmm, to spell.
So
it's probably not the best definition of dyslexia.
That was a great description. Yeah. So people with dyslexia, for the most part, struggle with manipulating sounds in words and assigning them to letters and blending them and breaking them apart,
yes,
and decoding them. It is not, I want to see if you agree with me, we have to be the myth busters, because I still, even just last week, had a parent that I met with that was confused why their child didn't have dyslexia, or they were confused about when we were talking about visual processing deficits. So dyslexia is not reversing letters.
No.
Or seeing words backwards.
No.
Or writing backwards or reading backwards.
No. No.
It is more language-based.
It is a processing of language and sounds in language. It's a it's a neurological deficit. Okay?
Okay,
so it's neurological. So that means there's cognitive abilities that have to be intact and, you know, retrievable, utilized, right? Where you can tap into those cognitive skills to process language.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what happens is, because reversals are huge, or, you know, the letters float on the page.
Mm-hmm.
No, they don't. That's something different,
mm-hmm,
okay? What it is that I might hear the sound B in the word bat. So what happens is the sound B, let's say I'm gonna spell it. So I have to hold the sound B in my working memory. Then I have to race, I always think of my working memory in the front and my long-term memory is in the way back of my brain. So I have to go run to the back of my brain, find the file cabinet that has the B. And in the whole time, I'm holding that sound in my working memory, and I'm fumbling through the file cabinet as fast as I can, because eventually I'm going to lose the sound,
mm-hmm,
B. It's going to go away. And so I fumble through, and I find D, and I pull it, because I'm in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not automatic for me. Okay, I'm fumbling and, you know, no, that's not it. It's not A. Okay, oh, it's D. And then I run back to my working memory and I attach the D to the sound B, and now my hand can write it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has nothing to do with that I see a B reversed as a D.
Mm-hmm.
It's the retrieval. It's the processing. It's the steps that we take. And
like,
it's not really
metaphor.
Steps, but it's just the process of retrieving. That's why, and you know this as diagnosticians, our CTOP is so important.
Mm-hmm.
That is the test that shows us if you are dyslexic or not.
Right. For our listeners, the CTOP is a standardized assessment we give called the Comprehensive Test of Phonological Processing that helps us determine an individual's phonemic awareness, their phonological processing, their ability to understand the sound structure of our language and to retrieve those sounds and manipulate those sounds.
Yeah, and so with the CTOP, we have rapid retrieval and we have phonological memory. And those help us understand where the weakness is in their cognitive abilities to process language.
So there could be a breakdown running from the B in the front of your brain. I'm picturing you running to the back of your brain, going through the file cabinet, searching for the symbol that associates with B.
So there
could be a breakdown in that running back to the file cabinet.
Right. So if I have weak phonological memory, I'm not going to hold that sound B. in my mind very long. So then I'm going to go run back to the file cabinet. I'm just going to pick any letter that my hand falls onto, because at that point, I don't even remember the sound that I'm supposed to be finding. Right. So I'll just pull out a letter T. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's not reversals of, you know, that's just, I'm just pulling a letter.
Right.
Okay, or with rapid memory, what is it? It's rapid
Retrieval.
It's automaticity.
Yeah.
It's automatic, quick retrieval of something accurately.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I can hold it in my memory, but I can't retrieve it quickly and automatically and accurately to be able to then spell it. Mm-hmm. So then that's where we can get the D mm-hmm. instead of the B.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And totally. So that's why we can look at, you know, that's why, so the CTOP is so important, because for me, I need to know what I'm attacking. Is it phonological memory more so than the rapid automatic naming of stuff? Or is it both?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a double deficit?
Right.
Because then it's really going to take some time. And it can work, but it's going to take time because it's that slow drip. We need lots of time to practice how to keep it in our working memory, but then also lots of practice in our retrieval.
Mm-hmm.
So
I was going to say, so why is, like, typical classroom instruction, let's say, for example, I was a first grade teacher when I was a teacher. I was teaching children basically how to read.
Mm-hmm.
And why is good teaching practice and following, you know, the state guided curriculum, why is that not necessarily the best way to reach dyslexic students or students with dyslexia? Why is it that they can't learn and make adequate progress in their reading like their same age peers in a first grade classroom, for example, that has a really, you know, good teacher that's giving good instruction?
Mm-hmm. So I could probably talk about this for a very long time, so you'll have to cut me off if I start getting too much. But when I am mentoring new therapists, so often they will be like, oh, but they're so good at that. Like, they did that so well. Like, they read that list of words so well. And, you know, do they really need therapy? Right? And then you have someone saying, well, but why do we have to do it like that? Like, that's so boring. Apple, bat, buh. Mm-hmm. That's so boring. And they just have to read those list of words, and they're just consonant, vowel, consonant words. I mean, like, can't we make it fun like they would in the classroom? And you can't.
You can't?
You can give popsicles and, you know, a little bit of sugar helps the medicine go down, and offer candy and treats and rewards and prizes. But you have to stick to the therapy, because it is therapy. We are rerouting brain circuitry so that these kids and these adults, young adults, can process language efficiently and accurately, better than they can without the therapy. So if making it fun and, you know, making it different than what the therapeutic curriculum says to do, then they would already know how to read because they already had it fun.
Right.
And they already had it in kindergarten and preschool and at home in a print-rich environment with parents that could read and read to them. They already went to Montessori school. They already went to the greatest, you know, private public school with all of that print-rich environment and experiences, and they can't read.
But why? Why did that not work?
Because mm-hmm. they have a neurological deficit that doesn't allow them to process language the way a neurotypical brain can. A neurotypical brain can soak it in like a sponge and just watch how people do it and learn from watching, learn from doing. They don't need as much direct explosive teaching. Yeah.
So
they
then
learn incidentally.
They learn by osmosis, mm-hmm. incidentally, all of that. We're dyslexics. We have to have explicit, direct, systematic, multi-sensory instruction, because that is the only way we can push it and shove it and make it fit in our brain. And it will, but that's the only way.
Makes sense.
So what, how, if you had to explain then, and you may just have, what is different about a doing a dyslexia program versus going to a reading tutor?
Okay. So.
Even a master reading tutor.
Okay. So I, before coming, I had this major question in my own head, like, okay, what does it take? You know, in Texas, TEA has required teachers to do this 60-hour additional training called Reading Academy. And we're losing a lot of great teachers from it. Mm-hmm. I think that it's, I think the intent is fabulous, but I don't know where the breakdown is. I don't know. And that's not what we're here for, but it is out there. Okay. And the mandate is like, you know, you need to have the training done by 2023 to be a teacher in Texas. And so I thought, okay, well, so how much training are regular ed elementary school teachers given in reading? Mm-hmm. So I went to two different universities, one a private, local, very well-known, very well-established university here in our area. And then I researched another Texas university that's very credible as well. Anywhere from 9 to about 15 hours of your 60 hours, right, of teaching undergrad is devoted to reading development and instruction.
And
I could be, and so if anyone out there is listening to this and I didn't read it correctly, but what I gathered, it was about 9, maybe 12 hours.
Yeah, that does sound about right.
Right, because we need to have well-rounded teachers. They have to teach everything. Right. You can't just devote all your time to one thing.
Right.
But yet reading is something that has to be, you have to be able to do everything. Mm-hmm. Right? So you look at that. Okay, well, to me as a dyslexia therapist, I had 40 hours just strictly on reading development at SMU.
Yeah.
To get my therapy license. And that's what they do at Shelton. That's what they do at all the therapy, because that is the requirement. Mm-hmm. You have to be a teacher level dyslexia trained practitioner. That's what you have to have.
Right.
And then you have more, obviously, if you're a therapist. But it's concentrated. And what I learned, I didn't learn Hooked on Phonics.
Right.
Okay. But I learned how the brain works and how the brain, where the deficit is with the brain, and then how does the brain correct itself over time, and how does the therapy impact that, and how am I supposed to deliver that instruction explicitly, systematically, multisensory, you know, direct instruction, so that it will work. Mm-hmm. You don't get that as a classroom teacher. Right. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have a master reading teacher who maybe did a little bit extra learning, maybe had a curiosity in something and picked up a little bit more, and is a little bit exceptional, more exceptional maybe, you know, than someone else, okay?
Mm-hmm. But they still need that dyslexia understanding.
You need to have that understanding. And if you're not focusing on dyslexia, you're not going to get it.
Right.
Now, you might have read it in a book or something, Sally, you know, Shaywitz's book, and that, okay, that's great.
Right.
That's a lucky parent who's got that kind teacher, of teacher. Yeah. Okay, but they're not all doing it.
Mm-mm. But they still have to understand the dyslexic brain and the weaknesses within processing language within the dyslexic brain.
Mm-hmm.
And those most dyslexia therapy curriculum programs that I've seen, they have a lot of research and evidence behind them that they have shown the efficacy, so to speak, the
fidelity,
fidelity, the reliability of the results to improve the reading, writing, spelling skills of individuals with dyslexia.
And so that's what my next question was going to be, is like, you don't create your own curriculum. No. There are programs out there that you've been trained to administer.
Yes. Yes. And they all have to have a commonality in phonological awareness, this, you know, with spelling and reading and writing. There's direct systematic. I mean, it's all laid out for you. And the thing is, you can't just pick up the teacher manual and just start teaching it. Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. We're not diagnosticians, certified academic language therapists and practitioners. We're not what you guys are. But at the same time, we have to keep not diagnosing, because once diagnosed, always diagnosed, okay? But we have to be very prescriptive mm-hmm. about what we're doing. And that's where our assessments and our progress monitorings, they are going to direct how much focus or how much more time is needed for that student
on certain
in certain
skills.
Areas.
Yeah.
You know, one of the biggest things that I say it all the time, and I think it is such a crux to what we do. We go as fast as our students can go, but we slow down as much as they need us to slow down when they need it.
Mm-hmm.
So we go as fast as we can go, as slow as we need to go. So when I have a student who can just do all that, well, then we're just going to do all that. But then when we need to slow down, then we need to slow down. And then when I get to that place that I know we need to slow down, I need to know enough about what I'm doing that I really am being therapeutic and prescriptive. And I'm pushing them and scaffolding them to that next place that their neurology needs to go mm-hmm. to create those pathways. So a regular teacher, there's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you work one-on-one with students, correct?
I work one-on-one, but even if you're working in a group.
So I'm thinking of, you know, a lot of public schools have dyslexia therapy programs.
Mm-hmm.
They pull kids out of class, they put them in a small group with maybe a certified dyslexia therapist, hopefully. Sometimes just someone who's had some extra training mm-hmm. in reading and dyslexia.
Or they might have been trained, you know, in
a specific
that curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that training is going to give you what you need.
Right. But my concern is that it's in a group setting. It's at a specific time of day. It may be for 45 minutes. So there may be 5 kids that are getting it and making kind of steady, adequate progress. And there might be 2 that are slower, that they need that slowdown. But I don't think that those teachers in the school setting that get to see those groups of kids with dyslexia 45 minutes a day, 4 days a week, I don't think they have the freedom to slow down. So I think that's another great benefit of going to
private.
A private dyslexia therapist is to get that one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you're constantly assessing mm-hmm. the skills to see what you need to prescribe next, where mm-hmm. you need to go, or do you need to slow down and spend extra time on something you've already covered? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it's hard being a teacher in a group setting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yes, you're in a smaller group than a classroom setting, but I think that the demands on a dyslexia teacher or therapist that has a group class, the demands that you see in the classroom, in the regular ed classroom with the teacher who has 25 to 36 kids, you're seeing it on the dyslexia therapist or the mm-hmm. dyslexia teacher also, even though they have a smaller class.
Right,
so people will think, oh, well, you can do so much more because you just have 5 kids. Well, not really. Mm-hmm. I have 5 kids who are in a critical place in their pathway of learning and development. And they need everything I have, just like in the regular ed classroom, all those kids need everything that mm-hmm. their expert teacher has. So it's a small group setting for a reason.
Right.
We have to be hyper-focused on what we're doing. And I do think it is hard. And I think that every district is different.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen not just in a district, but even every school within a district is different. Mm-hmm. And I think it has a lot to do with your dyslexia director of your district. I think it has to do with your campus principal and how much they get it. Mm-hmm. I think it has to do with your therapist and how much she's willing or he's willing to advocate
right.
for their students. I think that it can be done. Mm-hmm. I don't know how, because I, you know, that's not what I do. I could definitely give some ideas because right. I'm a very opinionated person, but you know, but it is harder to do that in a group setting. It right. can be done, and I know teachers out so there are doing it.
And doing yeah, it damn well, yeah.
But it's hard.
Yeah.
Well, I told you it would be chock full of good information. I hope you guys really enjoyed the first part of our interview with Melanie. Be sure to come back for part two during our next episode and hear the rest of our conversation. Have a great day, and let's talk learning disabilities.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.